So today I've been thinking, not just today, but lately, I've been thinking about a book I read in 1991, which is, you know, a long time ago. And the reason why I've been thinking about it is because the message in it was so timely. It was written by a woman named Annie Kirkwood, and from 1987 to 1991, Annie had regular downloads from Mother Mary of messages that Mary was giving to the world, and she wrote a book called Mary's Message to the World. And in it, it was also a time when there was a lot of awareness of Mary's appearances around the world. So she was appearing to children in Fatima and Medjugorje and Lourdes and in the United States too, in Texas and Georgia and other places, and not just children, then adults as well. So many people were having these experiences of, wow, Mother Mary's really showing up a lot. What has she got to say to us? And so that's what Annie's writing was about. And part of the message was predictions of a lot of natural disasters. Kind of dire message. But there was an understanding in Mary's message that it was Mother Earth doing her best to heal herself. And that also the call was for us to come more fully into God's love and to find that love within ourselves, to make a difference in our world, to make good choices moving forward. So it seems rather timely, doesn't it, that 1991 book? And the book we're reading now for our fall study, written in 2009, seems like it was written yesterday, or today, for today, called The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism by Andrew Harvey. So if you're just catching on with us, we're launching a fall study and service series. The groups are now full, however, we would invite everyone to be a part of this and through the next 7 weeks to read along with us. The chapter readings are in the bulletin, the discussion questions are there. You can journal, you can find a partner to talk through the things that we're grappling with and moving forward with to create a new world, because that's really what we're about, creating a new world. Sound good? Renewing, rebuilding, restoring, or maybe completely scrapping and recreating. Whatever God's got in mind, it's the highest order. And we are downloading it, like Annie Kirkwood downloaded those messages from Mother Mary. And then going out and doing the work. That's what this is all about. Sacred activism is a marriage of the mystical work, the inner work, the spiritual work, and the compassionate action, the service in the world. And the two are absolutely now, in our world, inextricable. They have to be together. That's what's needed to go forward. So that's what the call of sacred activism is all about, is to ground in our spirituality and then to be that in the world. So what a sacred activist is somebody who is bringing healing light into the world. A spirit of restoration, of equality, of harmony, who wants to truly restore justice in every way and offer an opportunity for everyone to create a world together that works for all. So a sacred activist is about that work. But you know, if we just look at the activist end, that can be the part of us that is out really, really busy making a difference in the world and can get quite tired if running on only human energy, right? There are many people who've been out there on the front lines of social justice and ecological sustainability and other areas that need our help in the world, and some of them are sitting right here. And yet the replenishment is absolutely key, isn't it? To replug into the true source that energizes us is absolutely essential. So now, activists that are out there that maybe didn't have such a connection to spirit are awakening to the need that I need more juice. And turning now to understanding that and to turning more to a deepening spiritual practice. And those of us who have been on the journey, this great journey of spirituality, and many of us in New Thought and Unity in particular, have been following that mystical path of inward work, right? And so years and years of inner work and personal growth and prayer and meditation and therapy or whatever it takes, workshops and books, has given us in some ways an intellectual understanding. Ideally, it's a whole body understanding and an experiential understanding. Yet many of us on that path have been on a path that understood that this was about a personal kind of enlightenment that we were after. You know, that nirvana place, that place of bliss and extreme light where we could sort of hover up above the world and be in this great energy of divine love. Anybody have that at some point, that idea or that wish? Yeah, right. Of course we do. And yet, when we do have those experiences of enlightenment, what we recognize very quickly is the game's not over there. It's only just begun. Because it is always the call of spirit to then be that in the world. That action step, that fifth principle of unity is key in our series and in our lives and in our times. So we bring this back together. You know, when I was thinking about Mary and this message to the world, and Mary had all these things that she was telling us, and I thought, boy, if she could just bring us a Savior. And then I went, oh, yeah, she already did that. And you know, here's the thing. Nobody can save us. This is a big part of what's crumbling in our world, is this idea that we're always waiting for someone to save us. We're always waiting for somebody else to step into leadership. We're kind of, you know, there's kind of that collective hesitancy. Oh, I'll be a part, but I don't want to lead it. But the time is now to say, I will. I will lead it. If you have an opportunity to lead your PTA, lead it. If you have an opportunity to get on the school board, get on it. If you have an opportunity to be in some kind of organization where you can push forward the agendas of the rebirth and the mystical renaissance, you are needed. You are called in. If you want to bring forth more of unity's work out into the world, we need you here and there, wherever there is, wherever your heart is calling you into that connection. From unity into that work, and from that work back through unity. We need all of it, all hands on deck, all the divine love in our hearts poured forth. That's the call of our times. I don't need to tell you about the disasters and the violence and all the things that are going on, because it's your daily food. It's our daily experience. And so we come here together to get infused, right, with the inspiration and the ability to meet with the things that are going on in our world, but not just to meet them, to transform them. So that's what our work is about as sacred activists. Jesus is the model sacred activist. You know, our founding teachings of unity are on following the teachings of Jesus, not necessarily Christianity, because, you know, Jesus wasn't a Christian, but following the teachings of Jesus. And so he truly was a sacred activist, somebody who took the time apart, the inner work, the prayer work, who knew his oneness with spirit, and was constantly about service, constantly about inclusivity and oneness, bringing everybody together from diverse backgrounds and places, always bringing a compassionate heart, a teaching of forgiveness, the power of faith to heal anything that ails us, physically, mentally, emotionally, even resurrecting from the dead those who are meant to come back and be with us. So we have a great model, we have a great teacher, and so when I say that, you know, the savior piece isn't really there, there are the wise teachers and the way showers. You know, I often think of people like Jesus who broke through a whole new level of consciousness for us. I think of it sometimes as, you know how that they have those hoops when you start a football game and the first player jumps through the hoop and then the rest of the team comes through to get onto the field? You know, so Jesus broke through and he's waiting for his team. And we're meant to be there. You know, the spirit, the enthusiasm, the talent, the willingness, the teamwork. And that field out there, if you stick with this analogy for a minute, is the earth. And we need to maintain that field, that playing field that we are on, and to now, in these times, understand that it's not a competition. We're all on the same team. We must be on the same team. We must be willing to work together. I've spent this last week that I, the last weekend that I was gone was a conference called California 2020. And it was about visioning for 2020 that California could be a place that works for all. And that we become a model state for the rest of the nation and perhaps the world of how you do this thing. And what is this thing? It is the mystical renaissance. It is the rebirth of a new era. It's a whole new way of thinking and being in the world. And what does it take? The Shift Network put this conference on. People from all kinds of backgrounds and disciplines coming together. There were spiritual leaders there. There were political leaders. There were people who have been working in social justice in all kinds of areas. There were clean energy people and people from banking and business. There were conservatives and, you know, conservative Republicans and centrist Republicans and liberals and progressives and libertarians on the same stage. That's what it takes. There were people of all colors and ages. There was hip-hop and spoken word. It was everything. Poetry. Art. Everybody is needed. All hands on deck. And it is a time now where we can't just circle up in our like-minded, comfortable places. It's a time when we need to intentionally mix it up. I sat in a small group with some people where we talked about spirituality. And then later I was going out to dinner with a couple of them, and I saw this woman who was sitting on a bench by herself, and she had was a presenter earlier in the day, and she had talked about being a Christian. And so I invited her to join us for dinner very intentionally, because I wanted to talk to somebody who had evangelical Christian and fundamentalist beliefs to begin a bridge, a conversation. Coming out of a conference that was all about that, living room conversations, inviting people into your home even that have very different perspectives. And so it was so wonderful to have that conversation with her. We weren't there to change each other's ideas or opinions or background or beliefs, but it was healing for me, and I hope for her, just to talk about it, to talk about some of the issues of the day. And I did share some empathy for her, because I would say, even though the conference did what they could to make it as balanced as they could, it probably was more tilted toward a room that would feel, we would all feel very comfortable there, and that she might not have felt as comfortable there, but how brave of her to stand up on stage and state her beliefs. So it's those kinds of dialogues that are really being called for, too. A big part of the healing, this mystical renaissance, is that. Father Beatty Griffiths was a Benedictine monk who lived in South India for some time and really brought together Christianity and Hinduism and became a yogi and a sage so well known and loved that so far along, I guess you could say, on the spiritual journey, that he was actually going through a transfiguration into a full divinity. And Andrew Harvey, the author of our book, got to spend some time with him, was working on a documentary, and he, chapter 4 is devoted to that, to Father Beatty Griffiths. And he talks a little bit about his relationship with him and some of the things he shared with him. And one of the things he shared with Andrew in the early 90s, he said, Andrew, as if he had like a, I picture it like as if he had this really big secret to tell him, kind of like, come closer, I've got something important to tell you. He said, it's the hour of God. Can you feel that? It is. The hour of God is upon us. What does that mean? He went on to say, it's a time of really important choice. We can choose the path of destruction, or we can choose the path of rebirth. It's come to that. We used to say, oh, has it come to prayer? It's come to the hour of God. And I'm laughing, but I'm not. I'm laughing and my heart is breaking at the same time. And we must let our hearts break. Hanging out in the bliss of the transcendent is a lovely place to be, and it's important work because we know then how it feels and what it looks like, just even if it's a glimpse, and then we can bring that into the world. But we also need to go down into the earthly realm, fully into the physical, and feel what's happening. Because there is loss and there is grief. And part of the mystic's journey is the heartbreak. There's no way around it. I'm sorry, I wish I had better news. But what comes out of that heartbreak? When you've had your heart broken before and you've allowed it to break open, haven't great insights and better understanding of who you are and what you want in a personal relationship come from that? I know we've all been around long enough to have had our hearts broken, personally. And that is the rich ground, the fertile soil from which we rebuild. Adyashanti is another teacher that I spent some time with when I was away. He spoke at Spirit Rock. And so then I started investigating his teachings a little further. I have read some of his work. And he's local. He's in Oakland. I've tried to get him here, but his schedule in 2020 is now being booked. So it might be a while. You might want to see him in Oakland before that. But anyway, I was listening to one of his tapes where he was coaching a young woman. And the woman was talking about how over the years she had trauma maybe at some point anyway. She was used to disassociating, kind of pulling her energy out of her body. And then she got on the spiritual path. And sometimes the spiritual path can really support that in a way, you know, that staying out of the body, staying away from the physical. And so she was talking about how now she'd been doing all this somatic therapy and she was becoming a somatic therapist herself, and that sometimes she found that as she's getting more and more to her body, that she's almost afraid she's likes the physical world too much, the material world too much, afraid that she's going to lose that spiritual edge, right, or that spiritual experience. And so Adyashanti said something really interesting. He said, he used this as an example. He said, you know, if you hate your neighbor, let yourself hate your neighbor completely. And then you'll start to think about the things actually that you really like about your neighbor. But somehow that moral compass, that wisdom that we all share and understand, can create a barrier to our full expression of divinity, our full understanding of divinity, our full understanding of humanity. And so that piece of us that says it's not okay, that piece in that young woman that was saying it's not okay for me to get fully into my body and my physical expression and experience because that's not the correct spiritual path. And Adyashanti is saying, oh, yes, it is. It's absolutely necessary. And so he used that very maybe crude example so that we could understand that when we fully surrender into what it is that we are leaning toward, that's when the goods come. The understanding really opens up fully. Does that make sense? Yeah. I could even feel it as I was listening to the tape where I wasn't fully in my body. And so I was right there with this woman and I thought, oh yeah, oh yeah, that feels much better. And so you might be like me, like sometimes your energy is not all the way grounded. I think it's pretty common for those who are in the spiritual journey. So grounding practices like sitting or lying down on the earth or putting your bare feet on the earth and allowing the energy to flow is a really valuable practice in these times. We need to be here, not escape. As much as we might want to escape, the escape is through. The escape is in allowing ourselves to be completely here, even when we're in circumstances that feel devastating. because it is through that that we will be reborn. It is through the portal of the heart and the break of the heart that we will rebirth this world. So, the hour of God, the midst of doom and gloom, there is the hope, the mystical renaissance that is here for us. And that marriage then of the service provider in us, the one who gives of themselves in service, and the one who grounds themselves in spirit is exactly what is called forth right now. An interesting thing happened in 1945. In two different places on the planet, two very distinct things were happening. One, it was the end of World War I, and the first nuclear bombs were dropped on Japan by the U.S. in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And then in Northern Europe, in Northern Egypt, in Nag Hammadi, in a cave, in a dark cave, was found the Gnostic Gospels. The teachings that are understood to be Jesus' direct teachings to some of his disciples. The kind of deeper teachings that didn't make it in to the big book from the Orthodox Church. And so there's a gospel of Mary Magdalene, and there's a gospel of Philip, and there's a gospel of Thomas, and there's much more. And so in these, we get a kind of different message of a Savior. In the gospel of Thomas, Jesus says this, "If you bring forth what is within you will save you. If you don't bring forth what is within you, what you don't bring forth will destroy you." It's another way of saying, very direct way of saying, we're at a choice point. And now it's not just the spiritual goodies for ourselves. It's not just the good feeling and the happy feeling and the divine love and the bliss for ourselves. But what good is it if it's not shared? That's a big part of what's happening. And so we do bring it forth and share it. So what will it take, really, to create this, to be a part of, to midwife in or to birth ourselves this mystical renaissance that I'm talking about, this understanding of sacred spirituality and active service married together? One thing is, of course, having our spirituality be grounded, to feel really grounded in these times. And so I want to invite you into an exercise. This is another teacher that I was exposed to at the conference. Reverend Angel Kyodo Williams brings this exercise. And so I want to invite you to stand if you want to be a part of the exercise. You don't have to. And to find a partner right next to you would be good. And then instead of facing your partner, you're going to stand facing forward, shoulder to shoulder. Okay, and so, you know, I know we love to visit. We'll visit in a little bit. So I have some instructions for you. So the person with shorter hair will be the person who puts their hand on the shoulder of the other person, like this on the side. Yeah, there you go. And begin to apply slow and steady pressure to your partner. So it's as if you're pushing your partner slowly and steadily until your partner no longer feels comfortable or they feel like they're on their edge, and then nod your head when you're on your edge, and that's information for your partner to keep the pressure right there. Don't move it any further, just keep it right there. And so now notice, those of you who are having the pressure applied, notice how you feel. Just take a moment to just drop in and see, how does this feel? And then you can release that. And now the person with longer hair, who the pressure was being applied to, I want to invite you to take a moment, and the others can do this too if you'd like, and just to feel your feet firmly on the ground, supporting you, so maybe shoulder width apart. Take a moment to feel the spiritual energy within you. So connecting once again, maybe with the heart and also with the solar plexus, And in the solar plexus, feeling that center of gravity grounding you a little further so you really feel strong. Your stance is strong on the ground. Your feet are firmly planted. Spirit is moving through you. The energy is moving through your feet and up through the soles of your feet. The energy is also moving down your crown and around your heart and your shoulders. Just feel the light and the energy and the love of Spirit, allowing that to move through you. Maybe taking a couple of deep belly breaths and just allowing yourself to really bring that energy into the body. And now I invite the same person with the shorter hair to begin to apply pressure again to your shoulder. And the same exercise, continue to give slow and steady pressure until your partner nods their head that they've had enough. And now just notice once again how it feels for those of you who are having the pressure applied. And then come on back, thank your partner, and have a seat. And so in the interest of time, oh, I should have said silently, thank your partner. So in the interest of time, I'd just like to hear from maybe three people. How did it feel before, the first time, when you were, Linda? Out of balance. Anybody else, first time? Pat? You could go further. You could be pushed much further. Okay, interesting. Anybody else? One more. Yes, Katie. The second time. The first time.
No, second time.
Second time. Right, okay. Okay, so we're on second time now. Anybody else, second time? How did it feel? Didn't feel the pressure and you're much further away. Somebody else back there had something? All the way back? More energy the second time. One more.
Much stronger.
Yeah, yeah. So, here we are in a world where we are feeling bowled over, some of us, right? That's all you got to do. If you ground in spirit, you feel stronger, able to take more, able to do more, healthier probably. I'd venture to guess that too. And then you can show others. How simple that is, right? So throughout our day, just grounding, allowing spirit to be here with us in the body, be connected to that. Then it's much easier to hear and to see and to be present for what we are being called to be present for in service. And service is a beautiful opportunity. I know there's a little bit of, we're talking a little bit of the dark and the doom and gloom here because that's part of where we are and that's part of what we need to face. But also, there is the light and the hope and the joy of what we're bringing forward. And the tools that we have available to us to use in new ways that maybe we've never dared to use before, to speak these teachings in ways that we've never dared to reformulate the wording so that it will land for someone else of different orientation or belief system. But that kind of challenge is before us now. And I think we're up for the task, aren't we? Yeah, yeah. So bringing that grounded energy is a real key piece. And then, you know, service, he tells in the introduction, he actually starts out with a story of Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa and this Indian businessman who was, as the story goes, comes in dripping in gold and diamonds. And he comes in and he's bowing before Mother Teresa and he says, oh, you've the Holy of Holies, you've given up everything. He says, you know, I can't even give up a samosa for lunch, and you've just given it all up. And he's just carrying on and carrying on. And so Mother Teresa, the nuns say, was in her 80s at the time. She'd recently had a heart attack. And she started laughing so hysterically that they were getting worried that something was going to happen, you know? And when she finally calmed down, she said, oh, you've got it so wrong. You are the renunciate. And she got down and she started bowing to him for everything he'd given up because he had no idea of the joy of service. He had no idea what it was like to give your life over to others and to God to be of service. Who is the poor person? Who is in poverty and who is in prosperity? And so then where she bowed down to him, he just threw up his arms and ran out of the room because he didn't know what else to do. But that's service. You know, Desmond Tutu, the bishop from South Africa that helped with the healing of apartheid, he said that if you are neutral in situations of justice, you have sided with the oppressor. When we, ministerial students and I in 2002 class, and probably the other classes too, we used to talk about how silent unity needed to break the silence. And I think that's part of the call too, isn't it? To break the silence. Yes, we have had this great secret club. Time to break the silence. Yes, we have been on great personal spiritual journeys. Time to bring it into the collective. Time to turn it out. Let it loose on the streets of the world and let it heal. It doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to be wearing. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. But it will take some effort to allow ourselves to understand that the spiritual journey also needs to go downward and outward, not just upward. And so, finally, there is this divine feminine that we've spoken of before, this energy that's birthing through all of this, that is a part of this, the divine feminine that is in all of us. There's also a sacred masculine. And if you could imagine a father and a mother who are birthing a child, the sacred masculine is the one who is holding the space, who is protecting, who is confident and strong that all will be well, who is encouraging. That's the role of sacred masculine right now in our world. And the divine feminine is birthing. She is the birther and what is being birthed. You know, it's a whole new era in that way. And so if we in ourselves can dance with the sacred masculine and the divine feminine within us and then see how that can play out in the world. And we can see the places where it's missing and it's hurtful that it's missing. Now, you're all from California, so this may not work as well, but how many of you have heard of Cesar Chavez? How many of you have heard of Dolores Huerta? Pretty good amount of you. Not as many as Cesar Chavez. But you know, if I took this question to the Midwest, I don't know that one hand would go up if I asked about Dolores Huerta. And why is that? The two of them founded a movement together. They both say both of them were integral to that movement. They both did all the work together from the beginning to the end. So why do we all know Cesar Chavez? And hardly anybody's heard, at least in the Midwest and probably anywhere east of California, Dolores Huerta. She hasn't made the history books. Equality needs to happen, and it will very naturally. Equality in all ways across race, indigenous peoples, all of it. I was in a small group with, we broke out at this conference into small groups of things that we wanted to focus on, and I was in the one around racial healing and indigenous peoples. And it was the most fabulous half hour of the conference, being with a group of 8 women of different races and ages talking about how we will heal. And it came down to ceremony, forgiveness, you know, asking for forgiveness for what we've done to each other, healing, birthing a new era. Again, it's natural for us. We understand these things. but it's finding each other to make it happen. And maybe stripping away from our lives those things that are keeping us distracted so that we can be focused on the birth. So it looks like it's well over time to wrap up. And so on page 117 of our book, Andrew Harvey says, in the final paradox of history, the divine will have the last word as it had the first. And what we understand is that we are part of that divine. So we have a word to speak and to be, and it can be far more amazing, harmonious, joyful, peaceful, loving kind of place that truly works for all, maybe than we could ever imagine. We won't know until we fully try, until we bring our whole being, body, heart, soul, and spirit into this. Shall we do it?
Yes.
Let's do our affirmation together. I stand in the midst of a mystical renaissance as pure love in action. So it is.